Times were changing for the Lennon and McCartney team. 9 exhausting months in the studio with Sgt. Pepper proved that. The budget went sky high, reportedly hitting £40,000 to package Pepper. Finally, in June, the first Beatles Spectacular was released, setting the 60s up with a whole new concept of recorded sound. While credit is generally passed to Paul for the Pepper LP's origin, Beatle best friend Mal Evans offers another angle.
Actually, Paul and I rose 50-50, Sgt. Pepper, a song, and another song on the album called Fixing the Hole. Two of us wrote this. It was at a time when Lennon McCartney was the biggest thing in the world, you know. And Paul said, look, Mal, Lennon McCartney's so big, which is ironic now looking back, you know. But Lennon McCartney's the biggest thing in our lives at the moment. We feel that it wouldn't be right, John and I feel it wouldn't be right to put Lennon McCartney Evans, you know, on the, bring somebody else into the songwriting team. But you'll get all your royalties and everything will be cool, you know. Me, I was so in love with them that you want my right arm, you've got it, you know. Anything you say, Paul's fine with me. I didn't even care, you know. I was having such a good time. Can you imagine a guy living and breathing and partying with the Beatles, you know, traveling the world with them? There's a 100-mile line of people who would take my place, you know. So I didn't care. I loved them so much. The song when we first got it together was Dr. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, and we were quite pleased with this, you know. And then we found out that Dr. Pepper was a trade name in for a well-known drink in America, so we thought, well, we can't use that because they'll sue the backsides off us, you know, for using their name. I'm sure they'd have been delighted with one of the Beatles writing a song about it, but we went through a whole list. It was General Pepper, it was, you know, it got down to Sgt. Pepper, that's the one, right, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
To many critics, the arrival of the Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band album marked the Beatles' performance peak, a musical evolution and expansion surrounded by controversy, and the confirmation that psychedelic drugs had contributed to their newfound consciousness. But was the drug scene anything new to the Beatles?
I've been on pills since I was 15, since I was 17, since I became a musician. The only way to survive in Hamburg to play 8 hours a night was to take pills. Like the waiters gave you the pills and drink. I was drop-down drunk in art school. I was a pill addict until just before help, where we were turned onto pot and we dropped drink. Simple as that. I've always needed a drug to survive.
I read the news today, oh boy, about a lucky man who may be great. Just had to laugh. I saw the photograph. He blew his mind out in a car. He didn't notice that the lights had changed. A crowd of people stood and stared. They'd seen his face before. Nobody was really sure if he was from the house. The army had just won the war. A crowd of people turned away. But I just had to look, having read.
Across my head, found my way downstairs and drank a cup. And looking up, I noticed I was late. Found my coat and grabbed my hat. Made the bus in seconds flat. Found my way upstairs and had a smoke. And somebody spoke and I went into a dream.
BBC banned the Beatles' A Day in a Life because of the Lennon line, I'd Love to Turn You On, created as a bridge between two snatches of different songs. The line wasn't a mere drug message, but an invitation to a vision. Was Lennon describing the Day of Judgment in verse? His section of the song was a chronicling of news items from the London Daily Mail, mildly exaggerated. Paul provided the wake-up sequence from an unfinished tune of his, and combined with the twice-used orchestral crash, it was analyzed as a musical drug rush. The final prolonged piano chord brings the day to an end.
Picture yourself in a boat on a river with tangerine trees and marmalade skies. Somebody calls you, you answer quite slowly. A girl with kaleidoscope eyes. Rocking horse people eat marshmallow pies. Everyone smiles as you drift past the flowers that grow so incredibly high. Train in a station with plasticine pauses, with looking glass ties. Suddenly someone is there at the turnstile, the girl with kaleidoscope eyes.
Critics went crazy with Lucy in the Sky, saying the song's importance was all in the initials, LSD. John Lennon sticks to his story. Son Julian brought home a drawing he'd done of a classmate in school and announced to his dad, "It's Lucy in the sky with diamonds." But that simple tale just didn't ring true for the fans, who remained convinced that John's inspiration was acid.
For the benefit of Mr. Kite, there will be a show tonight on trampoline. And of course, Henry the Horse dances the waltz.
More drug paranoia dropped on the Henry the Horse reference in being for the benefit of Mr. Kite, though John admits he lifted the entire song from a Victorian circus poster advertising the 1843 Circus Royale. Since Ringo didn't write, his songs were created for him. A little help from friends Lennon and McCartney.
What would you think if I sang out a tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me? From my friend.
example of Lennon's lyrical lifting is shown in Good Morning, Good Morning, inspired by the TV commercial.
To save his life, call his wife in. Nothing to say, but what a day. How's your boy been? Nothing to do, it's up to you. I've got nothing to say, but it's okay.
I like TV commercials, radio jingles. Because I like the idea of saying it in 60 seconds. I like if it says it in one headline. That to me is the best way of saying it. It's simple, straight, and it's over. The message is over. And if they had 60-second records, I'd be in there making them. I like them short.
I've got nothing to say, but it's okay.
Lennon was also accused of borrowing the Beach Boys' pet sounds practice, using animal noises as an unexpected end for the tune. George's composition, Within You, Without You, was included without benefit of any Beatle backing. His instrumentals and vocals obviously Indian-influenced, suggesting a remake of Revolver's Love You Too. He goes from vaudeville to soap opera with When I'm 64 and She's Leaving Home, hitting the toe tappers, the tear jerkers, and everything in between.
When I get older, losing my head, many years from now, will he still be sending me a valentine? Birthday greetings, bottle of wine. If I'd been out till 2:45, would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64? Garden, digging the weeds, who could ask for more? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me?
In hour seven, the Beatles lose their friend and guide through the music world and continue their own mystery tour, taking the group to India and back to Britain.
The Long and Winding Road, 93 KHJ.
Los Angeles. The Long and Winding Road is brought to you in part by Waterbed Warehouse, with six stores in Southern California, Long Beach, La Mirada, Orange, Montclair, Pomona, and two in San Bernardino. And by Two Guys Discount Department Stores, where you get more of the bargains you shop for. And now, hour seven of The Long and Winding Road.
In midsummer 1967, the Beatles grant their biggest viewing audience through a live television special called Our World. Over 400 million viewers caught the Beatles' in-session recordings of their 15th single release and Solid Gold. It had a message for the flower power people, though most missed the satire. From the first few bars of the French national anthem, the love movement is being mocked. The Beatles' drug use controversy, manager Brian set out to clear the record and clean their image, and at least begin a concentrated effort for a public drug disavowal. But by their own choosing, the group had already decided to abandon drugs. And with Patty and George Harrison speaking up for spiritualism, the Beatles became interested in the Indian religion and transcendental meditation. Divine guidance was the goal. Truth, light, inner peace, The press played up the Beatles' Maharishi madness. Brian Epstein was not involved in their latest attempt toward mental salvation and chose to stay home during that first transcendental teach-in weekend in Wales.
Maureen was having Jason at the time. I was at the hospital, and then I got back that night. It was about a Wednesday or something. And I, you know, I had an answer phone, so I pressed the tape, see what was on. And there's John saying, "Oh, we just met this guy. It's great. You've got to meet him. It's fantastic." Okay. And then I let it go on. There's George saying, "We went to this meeting and there's this guy, Maharishi, man, blow your brain out. He's great." Then that Saturday, Maharishi was going to Wales and they'd got through to Paul by then and everyone was going up. And so you got to come up to and see this, you know. So Saturday I went up to Wales and it was just great. It was interesting. Maharishi didn't know who we were. And all these people were at the station, you know, in Wales, middle of nowhere. And he thought, "Wow, God, I must be making it here. Look at all these people." And as he starts walking towards these people, they all start running past him to the four of us behind him, you know. So that's when it clicked. "Wow, what have I got here?" And then the news came about Brian, so it wasn't a very long weekend. We just all drove back into town, confused. I mean, it was like, what do we do now?
The combined effect of bromide and carbitol, a drug used to combat severe and chronic insomnia, took Brian Epstein's life, August 27th, 1967. His untimely death was a crushing blow to the group and ultimately instrumental to the Beatles' breakup. One thing everyone close to the group agreed on, the Beatles would never be the same. Especially if you knew them from those early touring days, like Jackie DeShannon did.
I think it meant the end of the Beatles as it was to them. But I think the minute that Brian was not there to lean on many levels, I mean, that is someone who obviously believed in them. And it's hard to say who believes in you after you've sold your first million records or you've packed your first 50,000 people in the door. It's really hard to know as a performer who is really your friend, but when Brian was no longer there, I certainly saw a different group of people.
I remember that
Fred Perry started as a stagehand at the London Palladium, then turned to lighting and staging Beatles shows before Brian's death.
When they lost Brian Epstein, I think that was really the worst thing professionally that could have happened to them, because they started to think for themselves. I don't mean they weren't capable of thinking for themselves, and obviously they couldn't go on being mop tops forever, but I'm not sure that the direction that they took was the right one career-wise, and ultimately, of course, they broke up. I still think if Epstein was alive, they'd still be together today.
The group had sprinted to success at a tremendous pace. Epstein's direction proved to be the best, sending the Beatles off on a climbing career. The Sgt. Pepper era was a pivotal point in the Beatles' story. But among Brian's most private papers were memos found noting dislike for the Sgt. Pepper album jacket, which seemed to be a symbolic death of the Beatles. The group was pictured standing beside their collective graves with a seemingly unrelated set of mourners.
But also the thing about the Sgt. Pepper cover, it was going to be a personal thing. I mean, the characters that were on the cover were all favorites of one of the group, and they asked... Well, we asked each other to provide a whole list of names of our favorite characters, our favorite actors, our favorite heroes, you know. And of course,
George, Ringo, Paul, and John each grew a mustache for the album photo jacket. The Beatles were blamed for the new facial hair fad. In the early days, Brian had tried to keep the Beatles clean cut, a minor task considering the future fame of his creation.
As the Beatles' success increased, and all these marvelous things were being said about the genius of Brian Epstein, he did change, and I must be honest, I finished up not liking him particularly at all, which is a terrible thing to say about somebody who isn't around anymore to defend themselves, but he started to believe his own publicity. He had one very, very, very lucky period where all managers go through this when they sign up a lot of artists, but he signed up perhaps 8 or 9 artists, and all of them had hit records that year. But there is no way that any one man couldn't manage an act like the Beatles, and also 7 or 8 acts as well. I mean, one of the Beatles, I think, would be a lifetime career, let alone 4 of them. And he had Cilla Black and The Circle and Billy J. Kramer and The Dakotas and Jerry and The Pacemakers. And, you know, I just don't like what success did to him once it happened.
One of Brian's final efforts on their behalf was the negotiation of an animated full-length feature entitled The Yellow Submarine. The film stars would be the Beatles in cartoon character form. The plot, a fantasy, co-written by Love Story author Eric Segal, and the music, several original tunes by the group. As there was no acting call for, the Beatles decided next to create their own feature. In a moment, the Beatles take their mystery tour together and go solo for acting spots.
I'll tell you, sometimes it's hard to believe the number of people trying to sell waterbeds these days. I'm sure you've noticed for yourself, or you had a friend buy a waterbed from someone that's now out of business. Well, this is why we want you to know about us. We're the original Waterbed Warehouse. You see, Waterbed Warehouse started in a small building in Pomona some 6 years ago by my very good friend Michael Hargrove. He worked hard and developed Waterbed Warehouse to what it is today. 8 showrooms featuring the largest selection of waterbeds and solid wood bedroom furniture at the lowest prices. Well, this is why people are driving from as far away as Bakersfield, Ventura, and San Diego for the best deal and best selection. And especially right now during our thank you sale, where we'll help you take mom to Las Vegas for Mother's Day. You see, with the purchase of any complete waterbed system, Waterbed Warehouse will give you a holiday vacation to fabulous Las Vegas. Come on into your nearest Waterbed Warehouse showroom for more details. We're in Pomona, Montclair, 2 locations in San Bernardino, the City of Orange, and our 2 humongous blue buildings in La Mirada and in Long Beach. We're open 7 days a week, including Mother's Day till 6 p.m. That's Waterbed Warehouse.
Two guys gives you more of the bargains you shop for. Yes, Two Guys is your savings store. Beep, 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 beep.
With all the shampoo on the market, I was really afraid to try just any old thing until I found out about Panama Red, the natural pH balanced shampoo. You see, now Panama Red is available at all Two Guys discount department stores. So not only do I get a great shampoo, but I get it for a great low price, too. Panama Red is a mellow, non-detergent shampoo with a coconut oil base. And because it's pH balanced, it leaves my hair feeling clean and healthy. Daily use produces top results. Buy some Panama Red. It's really good for your hair. We wish you good omens and ask you to share it with a friend. Panama Red. Now at Two Guys. Open Monday through Friday till 9. Saturday and Sunday till 7.
Two Guys gives you more of the bargains you shop for. Yes, Two Guys is your savings.
This is Dr. John Leader, and as you know, KHJ is giving away a grand a day every day for a month, even on Sunday. Tune in tomorrow morning after 9 for another shot at $1,000 cash.
The Long and Winding Road, 93 KHJ.